Hi, I'm Kyle Barton, and on this 363rd episode of the MWA podcast, Sean Wisniewski, Mark Hitz, and myself visit with Courtney Starr, an outstanding woodworker, chairmaker, and woodworking content creator. So welcome to the show, Courtney.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to dork out about woodworking for a few hours with y'all.
All right.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're one of those folks that I followed and interacted with and go, I know this guy well. And then when we scheduled you for the show, I go, so what's your first name?
Same way. I called you the other day and I was like, I feel like I know you well because I've, you know, created a 3D model of you in my mind from all of your Instagram posts.
Yeah. So
is that what the kids are calling it these days? My gosh.
Yeah.
3D models.
Yeah.
But before we get started talking with Courtney, let's go into woodworking news. But before we do that, we want to give a big shout out to all those being affected by Hurricane Ida. I know it's
absolutely
been, it's one of those things. You know, me living on the coast, I can certainly appreciate all the heartache that the folks in Louisiana are going through. But it looks like it's just continuing to just do downpours all up into the Northeast. So. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot of mess. So anyway, so big shout out to y'all and we're thinking about you. So
stay strong.
So let's dip into the woodworking news on a little bit on the brighter scale. So first up, Lost Art Press has the new stick chair book out. This is one that I think Christopher Swartz has been working on for at least over a year and putting this together. And what kind of happened is, you know, we've all talked about supply chain issues, and he kind of got into the supply chain issues on getting this book printed. So right now he does have a early adopter digital package. So if you order this, you get the PDF of the book plus a PDF of the plans in the book. So it's should be a great package. I've already bought it. I haven't had a chance to really dive into it except just to glance at it. But yeah, it's very in-depth and it looks like a great book, and hope to get started on it here within the next week.
They updated it before I got a chance to even open it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I know. Wow. Yeah. I downloaded
editing never stops kind of thing. They're just constantly.
I think they just found something just egregious. They couldn't let it slide. Mm-hmm. But, until you print it in paper, you might as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the beauty of the digital. That's a heavy digital book at 630 pages. Those little pixels, that adds up.
Yeah. I've just downloaded it, and I need to transfer it to my Kindle and probably take it with me this coming weekend.
For all the downtime you'll have?
Yeah, for all the downtime I have. Mm. Well, at least probably on Friday, but anyway, we'll get into that in a minute. But also, Lost Art Press with Crucible Tools has come out with some cast iron planing stops. Well, they're cast planing stops.
They're working on it.
Yeah, and I think they will be out soon. Yes, they're working on it. Probably, I think they're going to be about $50, but they look interesting.
Yes, I like these. I like the idea of these because they come with clear instructions on how to mount them.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I've had some customers and some students who had blacksmith made planing stops purchased for their workbenches, and they're terrified to put them into the stop, and because they're worried they're going to split it. And it's just really hard to know, okay, you know, is this the right size bit? Have I done it right? And Chris has mentioned how to, you know, kind of how to figure it out in the past, but no two planing stops, you know, makers planing stops are the same. And I just tell them, look, it's just a piece of maple. If it splits, get another one, you know, drill a bigger hole or a deeper hole next time. But it's just, it's one of those mental blocks. It's hard for people to get past.
Because traditionally you have to make kind of a step hole. And then I think sometimes you burn them in, heat them up. And
I've seen the burn thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so this is the put a hole like deep enough, and it's a tapered shaft, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
So it's literally a you know, and it says like a 5/8 inch hole, drill it through, slam it down, it'll bite when it gets thicker than 5/8, and you're good. Like that's
The casting is it's a uniform casting. It's going to be the same, nearly almost, you know, within reason, the same on everyone. So, whereas with your blacksmith made stuff, I mean, Peter Ross probably gets them pretty close to identical, but not every blacksmith is that thorough. with their work. So
any worry? I mean, Mark, you deal with things like this way more than I do. And not that you put a planing stop in every bench you make, but any worry casting as opposed to forging, as far as what this will see? I know you're not like you're never going to hit it with a hammer necessarily, but
I do. I hit it with a 3-pound sledge.
Downward, up and down. Yeah, that's down and up. But what about against it, like against the teeth of it?
You would hit the work from the end. Mm-hmm. So it's not a heavy hit. You're just trying to get the teeth to bite. And you can sharpen the teeth, which is what I do with the stuff on my benches.
Really?
You can file them so that they're super sharp, so they bite. You can just slide the wood up and just kind of, you know, thunk it by hand against the stop.
Right.
And it would be just fine. And, you know, I'm assuming they're using the same metal that they use in their holdfasts, and you can bash the hell out of those things.
Okay.
They're thicker at the top, but you're not going to be hitting them from the side with that kind of force. And when you hit them from above, you're hitting straight down into the shaft. So I think there's no reason to worry. Okay. Chris is not going to deal with a bad product out there. You know, he doesn't ever want to see him again, except in Instagram posts. So, I don't think we have anything to worry about there.
Yeah, but pretty cool. Courtney, do you use a planing stop?
I do not use a planing stop. I'm pretty obsessed with my tail vise, but obviously I've seen people use the planing stop and I've been curious. But even just popping one of my dogs up sort of works like a like a planing stop when I need it. Obviously it doesn't have the teeth, but sometimes I'll do that.
I've clamped a board down, like a piece of plywood down, and just screwed in and used the heads of screws as planing stops. It doesn't take much to stop a board if you're planing against it.
Yeah, I use my dogs as planing stops all the time, especially when I had a shorter length bench and I had the big slabs for the tops, and the planing stop left a foot and a half of bench hanging out over the far end of the bench. So I would just push up a dog instead and push against that. And then I could get the work supported by the whole length of the bench or most of the bench. So that's the disadvantage to using a bench top that's the same length as the bench you're making.
The rare occasion when you're building a thing on top of the exact same thing.
Yes, a duplicate.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, anyway, so both of those, the stick chair book and the, upcoming planing stop is, of course, available from lostartpress.com. So check that out. I think the planning stop will be released here real soon, and it's going to be $49, which is really reasonable for what you're getting there. So
that's a darn bargain.
Yeah, exactly. So next up is something I came across on a YouTube channel that was devoted to the construction industry, and they were talking about what's new this year in the construction industry, and they came across this company called Modern Mill, who makes some interesting wood product. It is an outdoor type wood product, like you'd use for decking and things of that nature, but they also make it into sheets and stuff, but it's made out of rice hulls. So it's a hull of the rice. And apparently, you know, you can buy it in decking, you can buy it for siding, you can buy millwork, you can buy sheets of it. And they've actually see some stuff that, you know, where they're using it to actually build cabinets and other types of furniture like that. And on their website, they even have a Adirondack chair kit, which is kind of amazing. Wow.
Two things that strike me as curious. Guaranteed not to rot, crack, or splinter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, that's very good. But also it mentions that it is free of phenol, formaldehyde, and adhesives. resist water, weather, pests, and fire. How are we holding husks together if it's not with some sort of adhesive?
Other materials, according to the website.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, I wondered the same thing.
I'm curious. What are they? And I mean, good on them. I love ingenuity. I mean, when Trex started coming out decades ago, it was like, holy crap. Yeah. I mean, this stuff. But, you know, there were problems when it first came out of, oh, it doesn't quite last as well, or it needs to be supported differently. You know, like the difference of that, like you find out this stuff is like heavy as Ipe because it's so dense, you know, and that has different concerns. I only know that because I installed an Ipe deck once, and those boards are incredibly heavy, incredibly dense, threw sparks off a saw blade. It's nasty wood, but it is bug resistant and tropical and, you know, whatever. You know, all those things.
So here's something interesting from their website. It says, thanks to their silica content, rice hulls are incredibly resistant to weather, water, rot, and pests. So I'm guessing they're going to dull your tools in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah. Hand planes, if you needed to, if you wanted to try to make something out of this material. So yeah. Be careful, folks.
That's true. Yeah. But you can get four.
Hopefully it comes from the factory so solid, square, and smooth that you don't need to hand plane it. Now, well,
you
a router
shape
bit,
out of it.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I'm thinking of like decking, not furniture making.
Mm. They're selling cabinets. They're selling. They want people to build everything. That's why they got the sheet goods. So,
Yeah.
You can get the sheet goods up 4 foot by up to 20 foot long. So
holy crap.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting. So if anyone has an outdoor project they're doing and, you know, we're always worried about, hey, how should we finish this? How's it going to hold up? And this might be an option for you to look into. Have no idea what the pricing is on this stuff. It just came out, but I would assume it's probably comparable to your other type of Trex and stuff like that.
I would think, but made in the USA, made in Mississippi specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a domestic material. That's surprising.
Yeah. And you can get it in, you know, when you're talking about lumber, it looks like they have it in 5/8, 3/4, and 1 inch with widths, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10, 12, 16. So, and then the length is available anywhere from 8 to 20 foot. So yeah, you could definitely be easy to order boards as long as it's, you know, relatively inexpensive, but it might be just the trick you need if you're building some outdoor furniture.
Yeah. Comes in natural and walnut.
Yep.
Or primed if you're going to, use it for trim. So.
Yep. So anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting. So, always, you know, I saw that I went, rice hull. So,
yeah. Upcycled rice hulls specifically.
Exactly.
Does it say where the rice is from? Is it from like some other manufacturing process?
I don't know.
It's probably, I mean, Mississippi is rice land. So it's probably grown right nearby, you know, up and down the Mississippi River.
Don't they brew Budweiser with rice? Maybe they just send it down the Mississippi from St. Louis.
Possibly.
Yeah, very well. Could be.
Could be.
That is the key, though. You need a source for this. If they're getting hulls of a plant, it would make sense if somebody is using the other part of the plant, right? I mean, get out the.
Yeah.
They've taken a waste product essentially and turned it into a building material.
Yep. Hey, back in the day, that was gasoline. So
that's right.
Always a possibility.
That's right. Well, let's move on to our Patreon shout out. So,
absolutely. So we love talking about our patrons. They are helping us with turn the lights on, keep the lights on, get recording equipment for mobile recording, you know, stuff like that. And a big thanks, as always, we would like to give. Today, we're going to shout out Mr. Rex Hansen. Thank you, sir. You are a friend of the show and a confidant and all the good things we can say about you. If you would like to support the MWA podcast, go to patreon.com/MWA podcast and, you know, flip a dollar our way. Help us out.
Thanks, Rex.
Yeah, thanks, Rex. I think he's getting ready to make the big move across the country. He's going to North Bennett Street. Yeah. In fact, he may already be there. Who knows? So anyway, so yeah, we'll have him. We'll have Rex back on the show after his first semester so he can tell us all about it.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so let's move on to what's in the shop. So, Mark, what are you working on?
Well, I am trying to get some kits together for a pair of students who are doing the workbench class. I've been totally beleaguered by problems with my CNC.
Software or hardware or all the.
Well, you know, when you buy these machines, you have these dreams of the efficiency and perfection that you'll be able to achieve. And I'm not smart enough to figure that out, I guess. So I'm having to, I came up with a whole program of what I wanted to do. And it's just not turning out the way I wanted it to. So I'm on to plan C or D at this point. And I think that's going to work because it's based off of what I was doing before. It's just a longer table than I had before. So you're
not saying there's going to be a CNC machine available for cheap.
No. It will still do more in less time than I am capable of doing. It's just figuring out how much more and what I have to do to get the things, the materials ready to put into the machine. I sensed there were going to be some issues, and so I didn't open up this round of the class. I already had these two people booked from a long time ago, and so I said, I'm just gonna hold off and see how this turns out, and it's gonna come down to the wire on the start date. So so that's what I'm fighting. And then of course this weekend I was supposed to be down in Texas with you, Kyle.
You're right.
But I'm not gonna be able to go. We've got a youngster here who's not vaccinated, and with the Delta variant, we decided that I should probably stay here. I didn't want to bring it back.
Right.
So I already had the weekend blocked out. So I'm locking myself in a room with a computer, and I am building out something that I've been planning and working on for a long time. And it's called joineffort.net. And the long-term goal is for it to become a community, a woodworking community. But in the short term, it's going to be, and it's sort of focused on hand tool use. But certainly there's no dogma around hand tools versus power tools. You got to use what you got. I've got to get some content together, get some content planned this weekend, get the website up and running. And, hopefully I'll have a poll up there. I would love to hear from our listeners. Starting out with this platform, the idea is to start where an absolute beginner would start. And that could be somebody who's never done any woodworking or somebody who's done power tool woodworking and they're wanting to kind of include hand tools into their work. So I'll have a poll up there that basically says, what would you tell somebody who was thinking about doing hand tools? What advice would you give them? Where would they start? And that will, I'll probably use some of that on the site, but also it will help inform me as to where to direct my efforts. I mean, I have a plan for the first few months worth of content, but I would love to get more input from other people. I can't, surely no one has had the exact same path that I've had through hand tools. So I'd love to hear what other people think. So I guess, Kyle, maybe you can put something in the show notes when I've got a link.
Yeah.
But it's joineffort.net is the website. And there should be something on the web by the time this comes out.
Okay, cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Man, I'm excited for this. I know you've talked about it for a while. So,
yeah, I mean, like Courtney, I follow you. I followed you for a long time, but your stuff never shows up in my feed. Somehow I got out of sync with you, and then because I hadn't responded for a while, it just dropped you. The algorithm kicked you out. And one of the things I'd like to be able to do, and the software system that I'm using allows me to do, is create a forum where you can actually follow people. So it may be something that I'm certainly not looking to put Instagram out of business, but it'd be a community where people who are basically interested in woodworking and especially hand tools can go, and it'll be paid because I don't like ads. Sean and Kyle have heard me rant about that after the show sometimes. But, you know, I realized that, you know, the reason people turn to advertising to support their feeds is because that's the only way they can afford to spend the time to do it. So rather than sell attention, I figured I'd just charge a small fee for people to use the community. So we'll see how it goes. That's a much further down the road. Right now, I just want to get some stuff together for people who are getting started. And my goal is to help 100 new hand tool users before the end of the year.
Nice. So, that's awesome.
So that's where I'm at right now. That's where I'll be this weekend. So
wow. Before the end of this year. So that's yes. That's a goal. That's a goal.
Yeah. I don't think it's too, you know, there's a lot of people who follow me on Instagram, mm-hmm. and a few people that follow me on YouTube, and I'll be promoting. I will probably have to run ads to my followers in order to reach them, to let them know that this thing even exists. But I will be posting the basic content. I'll try to keep it to like 1 minute blocks, very small.
Right.
I'm calling them bricks because they're basically the foundation of hand tool woodworking. So I'll be posting these little bricks, you know, a few times a week. And then for people who want to subscribe, you know, the foundations stuff is all free. So if you subscribe, you can get them every day instead of having them trickle out once or twice a week on a social feed. So, and I've got ideas for 6 months worth of stuff for 5 days a week. So,
wow.
by keeping it short, I want things to be actionable and not overwhelming. So, you know, you can watch a little video and be like, oh, okay, you know, and then go on about your day, because people are busy and they've got a lot of things on their minds. And if you can spend 10 or 15 minutes a day building your practice with hand tools, that's not too much to ask, I think, of yourself. Mm-hmm. And you know, when it comes time to build that big project, you should be able to, you know, have a big accumulation of knowledge and skill to be able to tackle it. So
yeah, and so these bricks are going to be easily accessible, so that, you know, you can go back and reference.
They'll post like blog posts on my mm-hmm. site, and then when you sign up, when you subscribe, you can actually log into an area, and as you are delivered these bricks, they will be stored under your account. And then eventually all that stuff will be on YouTube or on Instagram for free. But I've got to give some people a reason to follow along, because at some point I want to do the community I want to do, and I need to have a way to let people know that that's happening. So,
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, man, I'm excited for you, and I'm excited to see the results.
Should be fun. Should be fun. Yeah. I've committed to 2 years of working on it. So I paid for all the web support services up front. And so mm-hmm. we're going to see how it goes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just wanted to let you know that if you do need to do some advertising, you know, we do have sponsorships available here at the MWA podcast.
It's pay to play, huh? Are you guys going to kick me off if I don't pay for this time that I just spent?
No, I think I've talked enough about my jigs that I
afraid that's true.
A little there bit you go. Too. So anyway, well, speaking of somebody that's never sponsored, Sean, what are you up to?
So I've been running a crap ton. Marathon training takes up a large part of my day or days. So that's keeping me tired. And I beat Trouble.
Oh, this is totally not worth shooting for anyone.
Haven't decided on one yet. But I'm far enough from training that this weekend is 20 miles, which is a good. I'm like 2/3 through training for a fall marathon, and I have a couple to pick from. I'm looking at one that's actually drivable too.
Okay.
It's up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is a 35-40 minute drive from my house. Mm-hmm. Late October. But then I know I've talked about my bees on here a bunch of times, and this year for whatever reason, we're having issues. I mean, they're natural issues. Bees are living creatures. They do their thing. So it started with dead queens, and we requeened, and then we had a hive trying to swarm, and we split that hive into two hives, and they've been doing well. And now the one hive that we didn't split, the one that was cool with its new queen, was doing really good. And in a span of 7 days, Sunday to Sunday, they went from cool, we see that the queen is laying eggs, we found the queen, there's active larva, there's new brood coming out, all these cool bee terms. The next week, there's more than, I'm confident there were nine, there might be more, what are queen cells, supersedure cells. So they're not swarming, but they are either unhappy with, or there is no queen, and we didn't find the queen looking through it. So now we already have three hives. We don't want more. And so we're kind of like cautiously watching this, wondering, are these bees going to scoot? Is the hive going to not survive? Because we're at the tail end of summer now.
Right.
And something like that, when you don't have enough population doing enough work to sustain them through the winter, that's a real concern. So it's kind of crazy.
Are you sure you don't have these hives like located above an ancient burial ground?
No. So that's it. Like, how did we last year, our first time in the same location, it was new to us, but it wasn't a stress. It was, you know, we were learning and we saw things and we had to identify what that was. Were they, you know, it was warm. And so they were outside. And when you see a pack of bees on the outside of the hive, it's called bearding because it kind of looks like a beard. And you go, oh my gosh, that's a sign of swarm. But it's also a sign of just them trying to flap their wings and get cool because it's hot in the hive. And we didn't have any issue other than that last year. Whatever we fed them, they made a ton of honey and they survived right up until I think we found them in late February that the hive had died. But weeks prior, it was good. We don't know what happened, but we're pretty sure the queen died. And then the population just dwindled down and they didn't have enough to keep themselves going. Bad timing in the winter for that to happen. This year, we've had every other problem. A new package and the queen died before they released her out of her little like travel cage, which happens in 3 days. You know, the heck, you know, like why did that happen? And now this, don't know, but I will say that, we have a neighbor down the street that lost a huge oak limb. There's some wood. I got to use my chainsaw. We had a huge windstorm come through here a couple weeks ago and, they lost, a branch from, I mean, it had to be 30 feet high. We live in an area of very mature trees. So these are big old oak trees and it took out a corner of their fence. Thankfully, no cars were in the driveway because it covered the driveway. And I have an 18-inch bar on my chainsaw and I just was getting through it. And this is up there. You know, the base of this tree is probably 3 foot in diameter plus.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big old boy. But anyway, they have a hive. Come to find out, their hive did swarm and it was in the branch that came down. So he at least tried, I don't know how successfully it was, he tried to recover the swarm from a limb that was now laying in his yard instead of being 30 plus feet in the air. Very, very interesting. So I don't know if it's the time of, you know, it's the summer, you know, whatever. It's been really hot and fairly wet. We've got a decent amount of rain. We haven't gone through really a dry summer. But yeah, I don't know what it is, but it keeps us on our toes. That's for sure.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we need to set up a hive death pool.
Do it. Months. Yeah. There are three to pick from now. So yeah, the dead pool.
I'll get some squares ready and it'll be a Patreon bonus.
Who's gonna survive? We have two Italians, those are the ones we split, and the Russians are now the problem children. Both Italy too are doing okay. And now the darn Russians.
So are you willing to send a half pound of honey to whoever wins the pot?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I will do that.
Patreon, folks.
Yeah.
There you go. I will pack. I have some from last year still, and that's so it won't be cursed by whatever's going on right now. or if we get, that's the thing. We're actually starting to feed them. We've got pollen patties. We're going to start giving them just because we don't live in an area that has a lot of late summer blooms.
Mm-hmm.
We do have like goldenrod and things like that are really good for that. They bloom in kind of mid August. So we're going to do everything we can to get them to make more honey just so they can overwinter and maybe not even harvest any this year, but, we did harvest last year. So, and we still have a lot of that honey. So absolutely. But I love that, you know, hey patrons, we gotta put this out.
Yeah, I'll come up with something and we'll go over it. But in the next few weeks, Patreons expect to see something out there.
There you go. And patrons, I will say this is the long game. We can talk about this for a bit because I'm fairly certain, even left alone like they are right now, they'll get through a good part of the winter.
Okay. So
we may not know until 2022. but anything can happen. They could run away this week. You know, they surprised us before. We have no idea.
That's true.
Yeah. Do you think the bees would mind if you put Vladimir Putin's face on one hive and like Silvio Berlusconi on the next one and then whoever the new prime minister of Italy is on the other one?
I really don't think so. Your knowledge of European politics.
No, it needs to be. Putin for the Russian one would be great, but I think you need Mario and Luigi.
Oh, yeah. That would be my
fun. Our original thought with Russia was something of Rocky and Bullwinkle,
Natasha,
because they're all female, so the queen would be Natasha.
Or you could do Rocky and the Russian guy from Rocky IV.
The I Must Break You guy,
Dolph Lundgren, and Rocky's uncle.
Oh yeah, what was his name?
Vinny or.
I can picture him. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Short, fat, round guy.
Sure.
Yeah.
They could be mobsters. We could do a lot. We could have all sorts of fun.
Yeah.
So, no, that's
Tony Soprano. You know,
yeah. All the,
okay.
Pick a Soprano. Well,
we'll workshop this. And,
there you go.
Taking
we'll
up
get something out there.
Time. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
So not be related. Kyle, what do you have going on?
Just the typical, just working on jigs and jigs and more jigs. And, I think I might be ahead of my orders, but, every time I say that I get a flood of new orders. So, it's getting good. Yeah. It was totally hilarious. As I was saying, okay, I need to build up an inventory and it's like all the extras I'm making, I've already sold. So, anyway, but hey, it's a great problem to have. But primarily, I've been getting ready for the Texas Woodworking Festival in Austin, Texas this Labor Day weekend. So when this episode posts, I should be there.
Yeah, actively there.
Yeah, recording. So, if you're hearing this on the way to the show, stop by and say hi. I should be recording live. I don't know exactly where they have me, but I think it's in a semi-secluded area off the main floor, I believe. But I'll figure it out when I get there. But so it should be a fun time. I'm looking forward to it. I got the semi-pro recording rig that Diami sent me. So it should be fun.
Heck yeah.
Should be a good time.
I wish I could be there.
Yeah, me too. But we'll get it done. We'll get a lot of good content. So expect in the coming weeks, we will have a bunch of people that came out to the show and a bunch of the exhibitors and guests on the podcast. So yes. Looking forward to that.
Hopefully that is a well-attended event.
I think so. I heard from Austin Waldo, who, of course, is the grand poopah of the show. He sent out an email that I believe he's already sold more tickets than they did for the 2019 show. So,
okay.
So it's looking good. So, but with that said, Courtney, what are you working on in the shop?
Yeah, I just wrapped up three chairs. All of them are of the Jimmy Possum variety. It's a chair I found out about from, I forget which, not an episode. What do you call an episode of a magazine?
Issue.
I forget what issue it's from. You can tell I make videos. they had this thing called a Jimmy Possum chair, which is Australian or actually Tasmanian. And I've just been kind of riffing on that design. And I made three chairs that were sort of like a reflection, I guess, on this whole pandemic thing. So each one of them was sort of a reflection on some occurrence that has happened to me during this pandemic and trying to kind of like convert something that I was experiencing into something better, in this case, a chair. So that's been a really fun project.
Oh, well, that is cool. So those are the chairs where the actual armrests intersect one of the back spindles.
Exactly. Yeah. So the legs kind of come up through the base into the arms, and then the arms kind of reach back and grab kind of the outer spindles, which support support the crest rail. So it's just kind of this whole like locked together thing. It's really fun.
Hmm. Yeah, they have a little bit of the Irish chair that Chris has promoted, along with a little bit of the Welsh stick chair. And so this is native to Australia. Is there kind of Australian stick chair?
I'm not like a stick chair expert, but I think a lot of those designs were born out of, you know, not having like a million different, you know, tools or resources or techniques at your disposal. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's interesting to see how those traditions developed on different sides of the globe, which is neat.
Because it almost looks like some you know, if you look at the vernacular of the Irish chair and the Welsh stick chair, it looks like, you know, you had an Irishman and a Welshman get together and say, hey, we're going to build a chair.
Mm-hmm.
So, well,
the way that the legs go through the seat, it begs the question of how the seat just doesn't slip down. Because it looks like, I mean, I don't know what's underneath, but it looks like they just pierce straight through them and it's like slotted in.
I've done that. I've handled that in two different ways. The first one I made, and I've made more like this afterwards, it's really just tapered, you know, so it just gets a little bit wider.
Okay.
Like, right as it, you know, right on the bottom. And then really the only thing the base can do is kind of like get tighter, which I think is neat. So it's not glued or anything. I have done a few where I kind of put a small shoulder. So it's, you know, the tendon is tight, but it's also kind of sitting on top of, you know, maybe like like an eighth inch shoulder. And so that's not going anywhere.
Very interesting. Yeah. I mean, it does look like, I mean, with a taper and the way that the back legs come in, I mean, you really do kind of hold it in tension. It might creak when you sit down, but then it's not going anywhere from there.
Yep.
Kind of thing. It's just everything's kind of binding itself. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's been fun.
That's cool. That's cool. So is this something that you're going to be publishing soon?
Yes, I have been shooting video and photos for quite a while, and so I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach with these, just because instead of only sharing kind of the process of making them, I want to share why I'm making them. So they're kind of personal, and they're almost like, you know, just like artistic expression. So I'll share kind of what each one is, what inspired each one. So one of them is, I call it number 19, and it's kind of inspired by the COVID-19 pandemic. And so it's very quirky. So you may have seen some of it on my stories if you followed me for a while, but, it's very quirky, you know, lots of asymmetry, lots of like on this side, it's smooth, on that side, it's jagged. I even sort of have this little, I use Puduk, which is a red wood, on each spindle to kind of make what looks like a graph going up and down, which was sort of representative of the, you know, we've all gotten used to staring at, you know, COVID case graphs on the daily, just like, how are the cases doing? So that's one chair that was sort of just a meditation on just how weird this whole thing has been. The most personal one was, amidst all of this, my wife and I are in the adoption process, and we had a failed adoption, which what that means is, you know, we were hopeful and kind of matched with a birth mother, and then it fell through. And so that was, it was definitely a bummer. But I think maybe that chair more than many other things in my life showed me that you can kind of convert things like grief into something else. In this case, a chair. And so the chair was sort of a reflection on like, how did that grief make me feel? It It has some of the physical attributes of the chair reflect, you know, the person we were interacting with and the feelings I was having. So that's the most sort of like maybe intense one. The third one is maybe the lightest, which is not technically light. It has some the seat is white oak, so maybe it's the heaviest, but
yeah,
it's the lightest in nature. It's inspired by birds, just because you know, we do a lot of bird watching, and that's kind of a way we've kept our heads on straight when, you know, it's like the whole world is crumbling, but birds, they just kind of tweet and fly along and they have no idea what's going on. And so I just took some cues from, you know, all sorts of different birds and just kind of found woods that inspired me and looked kind of like, you know, the patterns on birds' wings and things like that. So that's probably my favorite one. So yeah, each one was kind of just its own unique little expression.
Well, that's cool. That is cool. And it's going to be interesting, you kind of popularizing that that form, because it's not one that I was really that familiar with.
Yeah, it's definitely captured my attention. I really love it, and I think it's a very approachable form. I mean, the first one I made just from a picture, which was a fun challenge in itself. And so I just like how there's not, you know, way too many complexities. You know, you don't have to do any bends or anything like that if you don't want to. So it's kind of nice.
Yeah, yeah. I've been sitting here looking at examples, and yeah, there's some antique examples on the web, and you can just see that, hey, yeah, somebody just took a branch. I mean, it's still kind of crooked here and there, and
exactly.
it's got a real nice look, man. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool. Well, well, before we talk more about your chair making adventures, so tell us a little bit about, your favorite projects and what you're doing. I mean, I've been following you for a while, and it seems like you're getting into some exciting things, not only this possum chair, but, you know, sharing your craft and whatnot. So tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. You know, I really love new things. I think that's just like a general principle I've learned about myself. I like to try new things. I don't typically like to build the same exact thing twice. So even if I'm sort of taking something like the Jimmy Possum chair, I like to riff on it and try different things and kind of tweak a design. I really like leaving human details on whatever it is that I'm making. For my full-time job, I work in technology, which makes me, it just makes me contemplate a lot of things in tech and about the future. And so my woodworking in many ways is like pushing in the opposite direction. And so I love just kind of leaving human details on whatever I'm making. So maybe that's, you know, diversity of surface texture that is brought through from using hand tools, you know, freely guided hand tools, you know, leaving inviting inconsistencies, you know, using curves instead of straight lines. I think those are things I love in my work. I also tend to just love kind of complicated joinery. I'm kind of like a problem solver, so I like the detail there. And in terms of specifics, you know, what I've been working on is obviously chairs. Y'all maybe have seen my bench build. That was a big one I did a little while ago now. I've got a lot of use out of that. One very different project I worked on maybe a year ago now was building a shed. I had never built really anything at like a large scale, so that was just totally different. You know, it's like a different level of detail. You can kind of work much more quickly. So that was a lot of fun. And I also built the doors. I decided to build the doors by hand. So kind of, you know, traditional frame and panel doors. That was one of my favorite parts. And it's also been like a really interesting learning experience having, you know, wooden doors be in North Carolina and just observe just how much wood moves when you have the insane humidity of North Carolina. So I've had to, more times than I'd like to admit, I've had to like make adjustments to the doors so that they would shut. But I consider that a good learning. So those are a few examples of
projects. I built a shed last year, and same kind of thing. I mean, the doors are, I mean, it's 2x6, 2x4. With a cross brace in it to keep it from racking. But I had, babbled them to where they join, and it was a good fit. It was a good, I had good gapping when it was originally installed through this summer. I mean, now I've got kick marks getting the bottom to close. Exactly. I mean, it's not like the hinges are dropping. It's just the floor is swollen, the wood is swollen, and I'm sure come winter time it'll be fine again. But I've got a half of mine to now go out there and rip down the floor so I can put in like an aluminum brace just to like gap that so it won't move.
Yeah.
And keep it going. It's a learning thing. It's not North Carolina humidity, but it's Midwest humidity, and we get
it's enough.
Yeah,
anywhere.
Nothing like you that. Down in Texas, there, Texas. I know.
Well, North Carolina can get it pretty bad too. So yeah, it's probably similar. But Sean, I seem to remember you kind of just maybe supervised the building of your shed because you had your kids out there doing
the
work.
No,
from what I saw. That's on Instagram.
Just a proper child labor. my youngest, he's 15 now. At the time, last year, so he's either 13 or 14 when we were doing it. But he loved it. I mean, he was up on the roof with me, and we're hand nailing down shingles. Like, nice. Absolutely. I mean, partly because it was the absolute extremity of all of my extension cords to get out to where it is. My backyard is that deep. It's approximately, on an angle from where the outlet is that I can connect to, about 150 feet, out back, there. So getting anything out there was a pain in the butt. So when in doubt, we screwed in the siding with cordless tools. I don't have a cordless hammer or a nail gun. So I was like, we'll do this by hand. And he didn't have a problem with it. He liked being up on the roof. He liked doing it. And something I learned when I was in the trade, when you first start swinging the hammer as part of your job, I was a residential framer. Your hands are really tired, swinging the hammer too much. And there's a point where it fails. He's like, you see the fatigue happening and his hand would like slowly start folding in half. It's okay, buddy. It happens. Just make sure learning opportunity. That wasn't my kids doing all the work. That's for sure.
Yeah. That's when you really learn that you don't need a death grip on it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Let the hammer do the work.
Well, fantastic. So Courtney, tell us a little bit about your bench build. So yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine saying, hey, we're going to have Courtney on there. Cause I go, hey, his first name's Courtney. and he goes, oh yeah, that's the guy that did that bench build. So
yeah, I definitely heavily documented that. My brother-in-law told me he knew more about my bench than many of his nieces and nephews. So makes sense.
That's crazy.
Well, my bench build was, oh man, it's like, I feel like I'm like telling you a story about like getting married or something. I'm like gonna tear up or something. It was like a really important moment for me because it was sort of like really leaning into a couple different things, leaning into the fact that I had a desire to use more hand tools. And obviously, a traditional woodworking bench supports that with things like a tail vise and, lots of other components. So it was kind of committing to a desire to use more hand tools, committing to a desire to just do more woodworking in general. And I wanted to work more efficiently because, it's not woodworking's not my full time job. So, I'm kind of doing 20 minutes here or there. And so, I was getting really tired of figuring out like 100 different ways to use a Bessie clamp to do anything. So I wanted to be more efficient. And then, of course, I studied all sorts of different bench designs and obviously ended up on Plate 11 and things like that. And really just enjoyed just getting the plans and I wanted to challenge myself to follow the bench crafted plans and just use the plans. The Wood Whisperer has like a video series, which I was very tempted to buy, but I'd already spent too much money. so it was a really fun challenge to see, can I just use plans to build a project? I had never really used like printed plans like that. That was fun, pretty hard because I'm a lefty, so I had to reverse a whole bunch of things, which
Yeah, I was looking at your bench. I was going to go, you're left-handed, aren't you?
I am. And, you know, probably like 20 different times I almost made like catastrophic mistakes and glued things onto the wrong side of things. So that was a lot of fun problem solving. What else can I tell you about the bench build? You know, I decided to have a little fun with it, do something like paint the bench, paint the base, just to kind of give it a look that I wanted in my shop because it makes me happy.
Oh, no, I like that. And I like the color choice, too.
I like the painted base.
Yeah, that British Racing Green. What is that, Lexington milk paint or something like that?
Yeah, it's real milk paint. I think
It's real milk paint.
Yeah, okay. I think it was their Blue Spruce Green, which I really have loved that color. Mm-hmm. And I got to use some fun woods, too. I had there was like a reuse store that used to be here that unfortunately shut down that I got some really interesting, like super thick 3-inch floorboards that were they were in a tire shop, like a tire factory. So these floorboards were like literally encased in like tire mung, you know, like and so, you know, for maybe like a month or two, like my shop definitely smelled like a tire factory, but it was fun to use reclaimed wood for the base. I don't know what you call it, new wood from for the top from the hardwood store in North Carolina. But yeah, it was such a fun build, and it's like totally transformed my experience in the shop, and I'm using it as a desk right now just to make me happy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so are you primarily hand tools then? Or
I would say more and more. I think Mark used the word dogmatic earlier. I'm not like super dogmatic about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to be like religious or something about it, but I do just enjoy using the hand tools. There's a kind of a paradox where I sort of realized that even though a power tool is called a power tool, I personally feel less power when I use the tool. It's like I cede the power to the tool, and I'm sort of just like standing by and often just sort of can't tell what's happening. You know, like I remember the first time I ever learned to joint something, like joint an edge, was on a power jointer, and I couldn't do it very well. You know, I couldn't flatten the face very well. I couldn't get the edge 90 or consistent or anything. And it wasn't really until I learned to use a hand plane that I even understood what the jointer was doing in the first place. Hmm. So I think that's like those moments sort of make me want to use hand tools because I can just feel what's happening. I feel like I have more control and like I feel like I have power in the situation. But don't worry, I like using a thicknesser. I don't want to take a quarter inch off of like a 12-foot piece of ash.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's interesting. So that's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about, you know, sharing your craft, because I think that's one of the things that really drew me to follow you was just it looks like your enthusiasm from sharing your craft, and you got some mad videography skills, and it's pretty impressive.
Thank you, I appreciate it. And again, thank you for having me on the show. I feel so lucky to meet you as well, because I've been following all of y'all for a while. So you know, my mission is really to make things and inspire people. So you know, half the fun for me is sharing what I'm doing. I read a quote the other day about how an author sort of gets to enjoy life twice, because they experience the moment and then they write about it and get to enjoy it again. And that's kind of how I feel with making videos. It's like I get to do the thing and enjoy it while I'm doing it, and then I get to experience it again while I'm editing. And then I really enjoy inspiring people. I get stoked when people, you know, just take a picture of something they did because of something I shared. That like gets me so excited, whether it's, you know, a stool I've made, or, you know, people definitely send me stuff they, you know, due to their bench. Several people have painted the base of their bench and shared it with me. So I get really excited. I think the main reason I share is it's like, you know, I want to see a world where more people are able to make things with their own hands. That's a feeling I love that I want to give to other people. I want to see a world filled with more beautiful handmade furniture, whether it's, you know, mine that they buy, or whether it's furniture they make because of maybe something they watched that I've made. You know, I want to see a world where more people are satisfied by their work. I think that, you know, we live in a world that's kind of more and more digital, and in some ways that's okay, but in other ways it can be a little confining to be sort of like chained to a desk. And if I can inspire people to get into a workspace and use real materials and use their hand and their eye, then I'm happy. I would love if craft in general is more respected and valued. And I think one of the ways that can happen is just if more people see it. And I think maybe lastly, this is a big dream, but you know, I would love to see a world where it's possible for more people to make a good living being a craftsperson, because it's challenging, you know. And I think bringing more attention to craft and kind of elevating it is something that's important to me, because I think craft tends to be undervalued. And I think tech in general is a little overvalued. So yeah, I think those are some of the reasons why I really like sharing what I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Well, one of the things that I was following along with you a few months ago, but you made your own travisher. So tell us about your foray into tool making.
I did. That was so fun.
Hey, did you put an order in with Claire and she said, yeah, I'll get back to you in about 18 months?
I thought about it.
I could make my own in that time.
Yeah. The first time I used a travisher was I took a chair making class with Alia Bazzari. I think it was like 2 years ago. And he's a chair maker in Hillsboro. And that was the first time I used a travisher, which was just really neat, you know, like using a curved tool to kind of make the butt groove was satisfying and interesting. And so that class in general is what got me into chairs. And I made a few chairs after that and used, I don't know what the right word is, murderous methods to carve out the chairs.
Aggressive.
Yeah, that's good.
Murderous
methods. Yeah. I'm gonna steal that from you.
Yeah. I just made this one chair and I carved the seat out and I was like, God, I just hate what I did to that seat just then. Like it turned out okay, but just the heinous act that I had to, the tools I used to make it curved was not pleasing at all. And so I was like, man, I really need one of those stinking traverser things. But they're kind of hard to come by. And I don't know. I just got the itch one day and I did buy Claire's video and followed it along. And that was just my first time, you know, really building. I mean, you could consider a bench tool for sure, but it was my first time building a tool that you can kind of hold in your hand that has like a combo of metal and wood. So I'd never worked with metal before. So I got to make like a little coffee can forge to, you know, do all the things to the blade that you need to do to make it hold an edge. So that was a fun adventure in itself, just kind of like working with flames and stuff. And I think the thing that, not that I've like made a bunch of them, but the thing that like got me hooked, that definitely there's like a seed in my head that will grow into other tool making things later. The thing that got me hooked was the moment where like the thing I was making started making something else. That transition was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. So yeah, that was a super fun project.
Cool.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. That was pretty cool. Well, So how long have you actually been woodworking?
You know, there's been like different stages, I would say. I learned to woodwork when I was really little. It's honestly one of my first memories was being in the shop with my dad and my grandpa. And, you know, it was in Florida, and my grandpa just had like a 2-car garage that was like strangely deep. And like in the back of the garage was the shop. And I just remember making things in there. So those are some of my first memories. And then fast forward, kind of started pursuing it a little bit more kind of like high school time when, I started like a little skateboard business and would make longboard skateboards.
Cool.
Yeah. Super fun. That introduced me to a lot of different things, you know, finishing and painting custom paint jobs and using things like a router and whatnot. Fast forward a while past that, you know, living in North Carolina, when I moved to North Carolina, you know, that was like a huge shift, I would say. That was when, like, I had really never used a hand tool until I moved to North Carolina in like 2017. So I just started kind of like exploring what these hand tool things were. And I was lucky enough to, the house I moved into, we moved into when we first moved to North Carolina, my neighbor just happened to have a shop in sort of like a storage unit. And he let me rent the space with him. And so he was kind of fully furnished. And so I would just work in there and sort of got hooked. And then when we bought our house, you know, we looked for a space where I could build a shop out. And I've kind of been building out my shop ever since. And it's just been kind of like a continued experiment to see, like, what do I like building? What ways do I like building? You know, what's my style? All those sorts of things. So definitely North Carolina has been the place where I've kind of dived the deepest into woodworking.
Yeah, North Carolina. I mean, you can't throw a stone without hitting a woodworker, it seems like.
Yeah, I didn't really know that when I moved here, but I'm happy that that is the case.
Yeah, I have a good friend that lives in Raleigh, and I visited him numerous times, and when we go up there, my wife and I, we like doing road trips. So I've road tripped through North Carolina a couple of times, and yeah, there's all sorts of just neat stuff there. But my favorite is probably, cause I went there during a Woodworking of America conference. I've been there two more times. So probably the Winston-Salem area. I love that area.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, Asheville, of course, is the best, but you know, but anyway, yeah. So working at Woodworking North Carolina, yeah, that's got to be fantastic because you got all the resources there, not only from hand tool wise vintage, but you have you know, all the classes and you know whatnot there, and you know what, Roy Underhill's a couple hours away from you.
He, you know, he's only about 45 minutes away.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I like to go outside and just, you know, I just like thinking that, you know, the air that I'm breathing, maybe Roy Underhill breathed it. So he's close. I really would love to take a class at his shop, but obviously it's been a little challenging recently. But I've been to, yeah. You know, Ed's Tool Shop is like right above it, which is just such an incredible place. If anyone is listening to this and you're within like 2 hours, or even three, it's still worth going to Ed's Tool Shop. There is anything you could ever imagine there, and this is not a sponsorship.
Yes.
I've seen pictures and I've heard great things. Never had the pleasure of visiting though.
Oh, it's fantastic. And he will sell you on just about anything.
He will.
You ask him a question. Oh yeah. I got this one. I got one of those.
And
this is really, really rare right here. And I got it at a good price.
There's probably, I'd probably guess that there's, I don't know, 20,000 tools in that little space. And
oh, yeah.
Definitely. He knows where every single thing is. You know, I went in the other day and I had a really specific ask, and I thought there was zero chance that I would find it. I was looking for, you know, like little metal stamps that just have numbers and letters so I could kind of just stamp numbers into something. And I was like, there's no way he's going to have it. And even if he has it, it's not going to be the right size. And, you know, I go up to Ed and I'm like, hey, do you have those things where you can stamp numbers? And before I could even finish the sentence, he handed me like literally the exact set that I had in my mind. And I was like, what? This is insane. So, yeah, it's a special place.
Yes, it is. Yeah, so that is just fantastic being in North Carolina. I actually looked at moving up there, but darn it, I'm on this healthcare system that that just doesn't work in North Carolina. It's kind of weird being retired and doing these kind of things. So my healthcare is like, okay, you know, with the, what is it, with the copays and all that kind of stuff. It works in Texas, New Mexico, and Washington, D.C.
Wow.
Yeah. Beyond that, it's like they only pay, if you're anything outside of those areas, then you're in some sort of thing where you're paying like, I think they pay 25%, you pay 75%.
That's rough.
Yeah. That so it's rough. Just like, yeah, well, New Mexico, Washington, D.C., or Texas.
They kind of shoehorn you.
Yeah.
You want arid, dry, or you want humidity of Texas. What do you?
Yeah. Well, you know, once I get to the Medicare age, I think everything opens up. But hey, whatever.
Early retirement, all the benefits thereof.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm probably going to edit most of this out. But yeah, it's something else. I mean, working the system, man. Working the system when you're retired. Luckily, I retired early, so I don't have to worry about, let's see, I'll be eligible for Medicare in, boy, 11 years. Yeah.
Holy cow.
10 years. 10 years. Yeah. So anyway. So maybe in 10 years, Courtney, I'll be up in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, we'll be neighbors.
There you go. Well, let's move on. So tell us a little bit about your shop.
My shop is my happy place. I just love being in here. I would pretty much, there's no other place I really enjoy being more than the basement of my house. It's maybe like the size of a two-car garage. It's a basement in a 1961 Cape Cod. The basement, the cons are that it's hard to get anything heavy down here. That's sort of like a nice filter. It makes me incapable of spending too much on any one tool, is because I just will not be able to carry whatever that heavy thing is. But I like that it's cool down here. That's really nice. It's kind of divided by a wall that's, supporting the house. And so one side is kind of the machine shop. That's where I have my table saw and my thickness planer and bandsaw and that sort of thing. That's like the ugly side with I have like these crazy AC things above my head, which look like a giant squid. So that's like the ugly side of my shop. The shop that I prefer to be on the most is the finish side. And that's largely where I do all my hand tool woodworking and where my bench is and where I do 90% of my recording. So my shop is also, I had someone, a friend here recently, and he called it a studio, and I thought that was interesting. It is kind of studio-esque because I've focused a lot on, lighting, both because I really want to see what I'm doing, and also because since I make a lot of videos, I really wanted to have good lighting and kind of control the light temperature. And I also have kind of like a photo studio. So I have, I forget what they're called, the big giant pieces of paper you can roll down.
Right.
Yeah. Backdrop.
Yeah, backdrop. So I have those, so I can kind of pull those down. I've been kind of investing in sort of like different lights. I've just started shooting footage where I'm like talking to the camera in a more like educational style video. And I was like totally hating what it looked like. So I started investing more in more like spotlighting and things like that. So it's like half shop, half studio. I've tried to make it really, I like to think it's a very hardworking shop because everything's on wheels and I can kind of transform it into whatever I need to fairly quickly. I've worked really hard on trying different arrangements and things. And the arrangement it's in now is the one I've been happiest with.
Cool. So you said you've been experimenting with color temperature. So do you have like LED lights you can vary the temperature with?
I can't vary them, but I just made sure to buy all lights that were the same. I think they were like 4,000 K, which was I don't really like the ones that are like blue almost.
Right.
But I also don't like the ones that are kind of yellow. So they're kind of in the middle. And so that enables me to kind of get my camera settings locked in, and it looks good wherever I shoot in my basement.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, listen, let's explore what's next for you. So you said you have these chairs are going to be publishing out, but do you have any long range plans?
I do quite a few, too many. Yeah. I think some of the things that are on my mind are around content. I love making videos. I kind of think, let's see how I put it into words. As a woodworker, I feel like I'm only like a sophomore in high school. So I still have a ton to learn. And, I've been trying to get better at my skills. And so all the videos I put out initially were, they're just kind of entertainment, partially because I am not confident enough in what I'm doing yet to necessarily say, this is definitively how you should do it in sort of like an instructional manner. Of course, you could watch my videos and learn from them if you'd like, but I kind of stayed quiet because I was like, I'm mostly experimenting. And so I'm just getting to the point with my skills where I feel like I want to share how I'm doing things. And I feel confident enough that I can start like saying, this is how you should do that. I want to start making more educational content, longer form. I really want to start building my YouTube channel just because Instagram is not great for education. Mm-hmm. So I think educational content in general is definitely something I'm starting to focus on. So that's sort of a big thing. I will say on the chair front, I'm getting a few of them in a gallery soon over in Asheville. And that feels like a big,
cool.
Yeah. It's the Grovewood Gallery. They're going to be reviewing them. They haven't taken them yet. So hopefully they, they take a few. But that feels like a big step for me just because I remember going to that gallery a few years ago and I told the store manager, can you give me a few years and I will bring you some furniture and maybe you can have it in here. So it's that feels like a nice, like, I don't know, indicator of just making progress.
Mm-hmm. Not only, goal accomplished, but man, what a milestone. Yeah, that would be fantastic.
It would. I hope. Yeah. Hope that works out. So I'll be taking them out to.
Well, yeah. It'll even. I say it'll be a milestone. Maybe it'll be fantastic once you get some commission sales. So.
Yes. Milestone. Does anyone want it?
Yeah. This milestone tastes great.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else? I have a few other things. I have a project. I just got the green light on to make a bed. Actually, for a coworker, which will be. Really fun. It's a fellow designer, so I think she'll let me take some creative liberties, which will be neat. What other things are on my mind? I did buy Chris Schwartz's The Lost Art Press book, Make a Chair from a Tree.
Uh-huh.
And I guess Jenny's more. They're both of them.
Yeah.
I guess, are on that. So that is like it's kind of on a shelf, staring at me right now, just like wondering when I'm gonna. Open it up and start chopping a tree down. So I think that's going to be exciting. I'm really looking forward to doing that. I've never done anything like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've seen the video. I have the book too. And it's like you, it's staring at me. He releases too many books for me to read. At least that's a story. I'm sticking to it.
True.
But, so that's going to be fantastic. Well, how much commission work have you done? Sounds like you've done a few.
Yeah, I've definitely done a handful, a huge amount. I mean, a lot of what I've done has been for our own home, for friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many pieces, like 10-ish come to my mind in terms of mm-hmm. There's a few different spaces I've had furniture around North Carolina. I don't have a super, just because it's a hobby, you know, my output is not super high. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's more than mine. So anyway, unless you want a jig, if you want a jig, I can get you a jig. But yeah,
I do. That. Those jigs are awesome. I think those are really cool.
Well, thank you. Yeah. But you know, unlike Mark, this podcast is not about me selling my jigs. But wow. KBartonTools.com. Anyway, moving right along. So is there anything that we didn't mention that you'd like to promote?
Well, I will be sharing really like my first educational content maybe in about a week or so. Say again?
I said no. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I'll be sharing two videos on YouTube, both sharpening related because, you know, there needs to be another sharpening video on YouTube.
Always.
Yeah. Hopefully it's about scrapers.
that would be nice. I think Paul Sellers beat me to that one. But yeah, I'll be sharing just kind of like basically what I want to do is kind of just share some like fundamentals because I do get asked a lot of questions, you know, about pretty basic things. So Mark, you're onto something with the kind of the bricks there. I get asked about those things a lot and I take an approach that like I'm not afraid to kind of mix the old with the new. So I do want to share kind of that style. So anyways, it's a sharpening video and then also a subsequent video where I show you how to make an angle setting jig that I use to kind of like use a honing guide and kind of get angles quickly. So that's my first. I wanted to kind of like dip my toe into doing a project build because I've just never done that. And so it was a pretty simple project. And it was pretty amazing how much harder it is to, I normally make 1 minute videos and these are, you know, roughly 10-ish and, unsurprisingly, they're about 10 times harder to make. So yeah, those will be out soon on my YouTube channel. So I would love if people, would subscribe to my YouTube channel. I'll try not to make this a rant, but, I've come to realize Instagram does not really value the creative, community. And so I'm kind of trying to shift some of my followers over to YouTube just because there is some shred of hope that I can create revenue from that channel. So I would really appreciate it if people subscribe to me over there.
Yeah. I can definitely understand where you're coming from. But yeah, I mean, I think your videography skills are fantastic. So I can't wait to see what these videos look like. And, you know, everyone comes to, you know, the craft through different folks and stuff. So I'm sure you got a lot of folks that are following you that are beginners and have those questions. And so, yeah, it'd be a perfect venue to tell them about sharpening and, you know, fear not the sharpening jig and so forth.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm thinking about kind of surveying my audience, at least my Instagram audience, because I don't know exactly who follows me. You know, like I have some idea, but I don't know exactly what level people are. I don't know what kind of tools they have or even what they're interested in. I'm assuming it's close to what I do, which is why they followed me. But I do want to make sure that I'm kind of creating content that someone can actually do.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, cool. Well, let's move on to our fortnightly beer choices. Yeah. All right. So starting off, I'm back onto the cider bandwagon. So I was so tempted to do some Oktoberfest, but I didn't. But I'm doing the St. Arnold's Just Right Semi-Dry Cider. And St. Arnold is a local Houston brewery, but I think they got a fairly wide distributorship. Maybe not, it's not nationwide, but hopefully most parts of the country. But yeah, it's a really, really, really nice cider. So, and they're exactly right. It's just right. It has just enough tang and has a nice dry finish. So it's great. So Mark, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a Blue Moon tonight.
Yum.
But
with an orange slice?
Ooh, no,
stole my question.
We have limes in the house, but no orange slices. But that's a pretty, you know, basic beer. But I just ran out of a stash of Tank 7, which is from Boulevard Brewing up in Kansas City, and that is just a incredibly good, like a Belgian farmhouse beer. So I would recommend. It's a saison.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty tasty beer. Yeah, I try. It's so much fun to use accents.
It is.
But it that's the one I would recommend people try to find if they can get Kansas City beers, Boulevard beers in their area.
Nice.
So Sean, what are you drinking?
Oh, I just got Miller Lite. It's a staple.
yeah, the house. Oh, I
the house beer.
When I was picking up the cider the other day, I noticed I was so tempted to buy it, but it was like 10 bucks for the six pack. And it's just like, I don't know if I'll really like sours that much, but it was a pickled beer sour.
Okay, wait. Is it pickled?
Yeah, I don't know. It's had some sort of, it was a sour beer. It had pickles on it.
Sounds like pickle beer to me.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll try anything, but
I was just like, it looked cute, but I was like, it was not $10 cute.
Yeah, pickle sour is different than sour. Yeah,
it's like vinegar sour, right?
Yeah, but it said it was a sour beer, but it had like a pickle name to it, pickles or something like that. I forgot. But,
I mean, if it has dill in it, you know, I don't know how that mixes. That's interesting. I'll have to keep my eyes peeled. I'm sure I've had a pickle beer now saying that at some point in my life. But
yeah.
Or I've definitely had a hot pepper beer, which is probably not too far away from a pickle beer.
Yeah.
As far as a brine, you know, a brine thing being infused.
Well,
into it,
I know pickles are the things as a chaser after a shot, apparently.
Yep. Really?
Yes.
Never, ever.
I was in the liquor store. Golly, it's had to be about a month ago, and I forgot what I was picking up. But anyway, next to it was this pickle juice. You know, they called it something as pickle juice, and one of the guys that works there comes by and I go, "Hey, you're young and hip. What's this?
What's this about?"
And he goes, "Oh, yeah, people are doing that after shots as a chaser." Mm. Yeah, Courtney seems to know. He's young and hip.
There you go.
I had a fair amount of picklebacks when I lived in New York City, so yeah.
Picklebacks.
I thought that was just a band that everybody made fun of.
Yeah, that was Nickelback.
Oh, okay.
A little different. No, I ran a half marathon over the weekend, and a little past midway at the quote-unquote water stop, and you hear water, Gatorade. I'm like, oh, is this water? I'm like, no, it's pickle juice. I'm like, I mean, I get it. It's like electrolyte-y.
Yeah, I've heard that. Like, I've heard that for runners and stuff.
I've heard it.
Yeah, it's like a recovery drink.
I've never tried it during. Like, that's if you're in the middle of the thing, I don't know how your body's going to react to that. But for some,
wonder if it would like prevent hangovers or, you know.
Oh, maybe, probably.
Yeah, because if you take a shot and then you take a shot of a lot of electrolytes, wonder how that works.
My wife thinks I'm gross water. Every time we kill a, because of the salt, right? But every time a few times that when we finish a pickle jar, I'll take a good deep swig of the juice before pouring it down the sink.
Cold.
You know, just straight up, it's not bad. It's just like, I don't know, the right situation. Chasing a shot, I don't take a lot of alcohol shots, so that would be... That'd be something. I think it would, like, I've done lemons, after a tequila shot.
Well, limes.
You know, or, well, I've done.
If you're doing lemons, you're doing it wrong.
Apparently.
well, if you want to turn this into a pickle cooking show, we have a recipe that uses pickle juice to marinate tofu, and then we batter it and fry it.
Oh,
it is so good. It's fried tofu sandwich with pickles.
Okay.
So, if anybody wants that recipe, send me a message on Instagram.
Well, you know that's Chick-fil-A's secret sauce is that they have pickle juice in their breading.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, I do dill pickles juice in like deviled eggs. I make deviled eggs.
Yep. Yeah. Same. I mean, I just put up relish in the mix, mix it into the yolk.
Yeah.
For deviled eggs. Yeah. Wow, it really was a pickle cooking show.
That was fun.
Hey, Courtney.
Courtney, so
you got anything better to take us off this?
Yeah, picklebacks. No, I'm just kidding. What I picked up this week was from Full Steam. They are a local brewery. If you can't tell, I try and get as much North Carolina stuff as possible. So they're here in Durham, and they make a summer basil beer, and it is so good. It's almost like tea-ish in a sense, since it's been kind of steeped with the basil, and it's just like the perfect like hot day beer. And so there's a lot of hot days here, so I've been drinking a lot of that beer.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I went through a few 6-packs of Dogfish Head Sea Quench.
Oh yeah.
Which is good limey salty. That's just great because we just went through a nasty patch of 90s and 80% humidity. Days.
And that's what you normally have at the halfway stop of the marathon, right?
Definitely after.
Definitely after. Speaking of your marathon thing, I forgot to ask you. So how's your training going as well as cramping up?
So far so good. And that's a weird thing. In all my days of running, I cramp up during races, but not so much during training. I had a great long run last weekend. Tonight I almost got to 13 miles in a tempo run. I've got 20 this weekend. I don't know. I'm toying with the idea of doing salt tablets to help that kind of. It's
ultra performance enhancing drugs. I can see it.
It is. No, it's funny because I've known about them for years, and the idea of it kind of makes me think a little, maybe too much, of like, what is that like? And it's not a powder, it's a tablet, but you chew the tablet and like, but the idea of salt, but one of my running friends had some the other day. We were doing like a 16, 17 mile run, not that fast. And, they're like, here, do you want one? I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'll try it. I mean, it's not going to kill me today. It's fine. And it was like, oh, it was like a sweet tart. Like it was the size of a sweet tart. It was like curved on the top and bottom, smooth like a sweet tart. Mm-hmm. And to chew it, it wasn't sweet and it wasn't tart, but it wasn't salty. It wasn't directly like licking salt. which is what like was my, where my mind went when I hear these things. And so they're not exactly that. So I think that may help, because I'm pretty sure that phenomenon of my cramping during races is a little bit of adrenaline and electrolyte issues, you know, and so that could be. The weird thing about it is by the packaging on those things, it says take one every 15 to 20 minutes during exercise. if you're running for 3.5+ hours,
yeah,
that's a lot, you know, and so your mileage may vary.
Yes. Yeah,
especially if you collapse from overdose hypertension.
I'm holding too much, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, like, so that's that. You try to figure these things out and not test them on race day, you know. So we'll see. But so far, so good.
Okay,
all right. I'll kick that someday.
Well, great. Yeah, I should have mentioned that earlier, but anyway, just curious. Mm-hmm. So with that said, so Courtney, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
Well, they can find me on Instagram, and I would also encourage them to follow me on YouTube. I'm kind of putting a little more love into that channel. So those are the two main places they can find my woodworking.
Okay, and you're under Star Woodworks.
That's correct. So
it's two R's, Star, S-T-A-R-R,
and yep, just,
Woodworks.
And just look for a mustache, and you're in the right place.
That's great. Yeah, yeah. I was Mark was commenting that you kind of have a young Roy Underhill look to you.
Well, I'll take that as a great compliment.
Well, unless you saw Roy Young. Anyway.
Well, I can't compare. I'm just guessing. It's an estimate.
So, Mark, where can folks find you?
I'm at Mark Builds It on Instagram, and coming soon, jointeffort.net.
All right.
Yeah.
And you can always find me at Barton.Kyle on Instagram or Kyle Barton on YouTube. And Sean, what about yourself?
You can find me at most social media areas as SeanW78. Be there.
All right. And do we have a review there?
We do. We do. We got a review from Cedar Duck Woodworking on Instagram, and he thanked us for having Evan on. If you haven't heard the episode from Evan Birding, he was a great guest. But he said he hadn't seen his work before, and it's fantastic. So we were happy to lead that discovery for you. And everybody else who hadn't heard of Evan before, his work is fantastic. So we really love to hear your reviews and your responses. And, you know, we don't really know how we're doing unless you tell us. So give us some comments.
And also, suggestions on guests, too, because Evan was a suggestion. I knew of his work, and he was kind of on our list to have on. But someone said, hey, you really got to have this guy on. So we moved him up to the top of the list. And, yeah, he was great.
He was.
Yeah, we appreciate the suggestions and the comments and even the critical comments. We haven't had any of those lately, so I haven't been able to read them on air.
Roast us. Bring it.
Yeah, let's have it.
Yeah, speaking of Evan, hopefully in a couple of months, we'll have his best half on.
Oh, not better?
Best.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.